In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
If there's one thing Democrats hate, it's being called Nazis, no matter how Nazi-like they really are. Which is fair, because if the Nazis were still in power today in Germany, they'd hate being called Democrats. At least the American version, they're not that crazy. Nazi is the Democrats' word for anything they don't like, and usually that's you and America. Democrats divide the country on race. They use violent demonstrations to get their way. They undermine religion in favor of secularism and so-called science. They indoctrinate kids and encourage and push sex at them to undermine the role of parents in the family structure. They excel at propaganda. No Democrat policy or ideology is actually what they claim it's about, because if you knew what it really was, no one would want it. So they rely entirely on propaganda and censorship. They control the media. They control education, indoctrination, not education. They embrace health care that kills the right people and the right races. They seek to eliminate all political opposition, and not just politicians. They arrest and target everyday citizens who don't comply. While they wear the cloak of democracy, as did Hitler, they're really about totalitarianism. They seize power through executive control and orders, ignoring and overriding democratically elected representatives, just like Hitler. And they see parents as the enemy. Teachers and school administrators and state agencies push their ideology to subvert children and even seek to punish parents who dare to assert their rights. Speaking of, the Epoch Times had a great article about parental rights sweeping the nation. These are bills designed to protect parents' rights to raise children as they see fit rather than raise as the state sees fit. If a parent does not want their children switching genders because they're confused by what the state is trying to teach, the parents' rights and wishes trump the state's, which affirms what the Supreme Court has said for decades. Parents have the ultimate say when it comes to raising their children, especially so when it comes to what the family's religion and faith and beliefs are. According to that Epoch Times piece, quote, "Legislation protecting a parent's right to block the use of gender pronouns and other gender ideology in public schools is either pending or has already passed in all but three U.S. states." Guess which three states are not protecting parental rights? Well, for once, it's not Oregon. Technically. We'll talk about that with our guest. Instead, it's New York, no surprise there, Nevada, the state of Sin City, so maybe no surprise there either, and get this, Wyoming. I don't know, maybe they don't need laws for such things that they see as perfectly common sense. Of course parents have rights. There are parental rights of one form or another, even in places like California, even in deep blue Massachusetts and Illinois. And what it shows is common sense can win, even here in Oregon, if we can just get the people out of the way who are blocking common sense. And again, more on that later in the show. As Chris Ager, chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party, which promoted the New Hampshire bill, told the Epoch Times, he believes schools are losing the battle because they are undermining the most sacredly held roles on earth, mom and dad. If a minor can't get a pierced ear, he said, without a parent's approval, how can the schools think that they should have the right to promote potentially mutilating kids for life without a parent's approval? Recently, Joe Biden slipped up, a phrase which could literally be said every day, when he let slip what the left actually thinks of kids. They belong to the state. His actual quote was, "All your kids are belong to us." Okay, he actually said, "There's no such thing as someone else's child. Our nation's children are all our children," which, as critics pointed out, sounded like he was suggesting children all across the nation belong to the whole country to raise rather than just their own families. You know who else believed that? Hitler. Children belong to the Reich. As I said, the left hates to be compared to the Nazis. Well, if you don't like it, maybe stop trying to be just like them. If Hitler was alive and well today in America, he'd be oh so proud of the American left. And he would definitely be a Democrat. To look at our own state of the state, I'd like to welcome back Senator Dennis Lithcomb. Dennis, it's great to talk to you again.
You bet. It's good to be with you guys again. It's finally quit raining around here, huh?
Yeah, I know. Thank you. We appreciate that. We've actually had some beautiful spring weather the last couple of weeks. So anyway, let's get some quick hits from you. The highlights and lowlights of what's currently under discussion in the Capitol. Are there some bills that are actually good? And also, are there some bills that are just horrid?
Well, yeah, horrid is really the nomenclature the public ought to learn. I mean, some of these bills, House Bill 2002, is just one of those left-leaning, left-promoting transgender, pro-transgender affirming care, pro-abortion affirming care. In other words, you can have an abortion at partial birth or, up into the late third trimester, no harm, no foul in the state of Oregon. Plus, you do not have to be a resident in the state of Oregon. Same for those seeking transgenderism, those seeking to get body parts either sliced off, clipped off, hormonal replacement, cross-sex hormonal therapy, all of those kinds of things, and you don't have to be a resident in the state of Oregon. So what those imply is Oregon will become an abortion tourism state, yeah, or affirming care, if you want, yeah, or gender-affirming.
I like to put it, whether it's things like abortion or euthanasia, Oregon is going to become a death destination.
Yeah, actually, that's a good phrase. But more importantly, from an economic perspective, this can't be maintained. From an economic perspective, does anybody have any quantifiable data about what this might look like? How many people might be seeking this kind of, how many would like to detransition? Oh, and by the way, detransition's not part of this. So when some, and you can see these videos on TikTok or YouTube or Twitter, where people say, young ladies who now have deep and husky voices say, and I can't get my breasts back because I had top surgery and I had my uterus extracted, aside from going through, what's the lower surgery called? I'll call it. Bottom surgery, instead of calling it what it really is. It's mutilation surgery, because couple trillion cells in your body are stuck saying XX or XY. Mm-hmm. And the claim that, this is known as rapid onset gender dysphoria. And we have to ask ourselves, well, where is this, quote, if this has been around, if this spectrum has been around for all of human history, why are we seeing, quote, rapid onset gender dysphoria? And why are we rushing to the scalpel? Why aren't we rushing to counseling? Why aren't we wondering if this is really a good choice for your 10-year-old or your 14-year-old? And nobody's asking those questions.
Yeah, and they should be, because, so much of what they're talking about is irreparable. I mean, once you start lopping things off, you can't just put them back on, as you said. Plus, what really bothers me about this is these are kids. We are attacking kids with this kind of stuff. And I think that's just abhorrent. Okay, we do need to take a break. Everyone stay with us. We're going to continue with Senator Dennis Lithicum. He's from Senate District 28, and we're getting our monthly legislative update. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. It's our monthly legislative update with Senator Dennis Lithicum from Senate District 28. That's in South Central Oregon, mainly around the Klamath Falls area. And Dennis, we were talking during the break there. My producer pointed out that there's a recent article that says now 1 in 4 children, thanks to all that propaganda that the left does, 1 in 4 children is now questioning their own gender. And this is a huge turnaround, because we've had psychologists on in the past who said actual gender dysphoria really only impacts about 0.004% of kids. And so what a massive turnaround this has been. And it's all due to the indoctrination happening in our own schools.
That's exactly right. And it's all, it's based on social media and mainstream media lies and legislative propaganda, because there's big money in this. The plastic surgeons and the drug manufacturers, the individuals who will, can you imagine how many, you bring a 10-year-old or a 14-year-old onto hormonal therapy and they will be on hormonal therapy and the rest of their lives. And that they'll also need other things. Their immune system will be compromised. They'll be weaker individuals. They won't be able to live a normal life. In any fashion, they're infertile. And now what kind of, quote, health care for, let's pretend they now want to have a child and they can't, not in a normal sense. So now we have, you know, all kinds of other solutions that come from the medical and pharma industry. So this is, that's why there's this giant push. It's a big money game, and it's based on propaganda. It's a little bit like the climate change money game. This is a methodology to extract taxpayer dollars and push it to the social and racial justice community in terms of solving social problems, but it doesn't solve any problem. It creates more problems further down the road, and the problems it creates are far more expensive and impact far more people, one in four instead of one in 10,000. In Oregon, there isn't a single school district that had 10,000 students in it. Maybe Portland Unified, but that means you would never know an individual who was gender dysphoric, and they would outgrow it. It used to typically be boys, and boys would outgrow it. Now it's mainly girls. Abigail Schreier has a book. I shouldn't have mentioned it without remembering the title.
That's okay. We can look it up. But you know what bothers me so much about this is that it's the left preying on the most innocent. These are kids,
right.
And I think all of this should be off limits. These kinds of discussions should not be happening until they're 18. And as Angela Plowhead, that's who we had on to talk about all of this, she says most kids outgrow this. The vast majority of them outgrow it. It's only something like of the small minority that actually this was affecting. Over 98% of those that were questioning grew out of it. And so it's they just need to lay off these kids. And, you know, but that's, you know, as you say, it's about propaganda. It's about social media. It's cool to be questioning one's gender. I mean, just look at all the attention you get. You're a rebel. And so I really wish that we would just outlaw this kind of talk to kids and just let them be kids, focus on being kids. And maybe we could actually focus on education.
How do you restore innocence? You restore innocence by protecting your children from the terrible harm, you know, that's getting published in social media, and you teach them math instead of having. See, what's really interesting is it's the questioning concept. Let me sow confusion, and what will I reap? I'll reap confusion. I'll reap questioning. I'll reap individuals who don't know right from wrong or up from down. And what that implies is I've broken the moral compass. I've broken the biological compass. I've broken the scientific compass. All the things that you and I grew up with using in our life to determine appropriateness of answers, we just shattered them on the kitchen floor. And we're wondering why there's so many children today questioning their sex, their biology. Can science really do what science says it can do when it can't? And these are all, you know, this is a mound of broken compasses in every area of life.
Yes.
You can't read fine literature anymore because it's, you know, filled with all of this leftist propaganda. that says it's horrid. You can't read Shakespeare, the bard. You can't read him because he's got a black character in one of his plays that gets called a... And at some point, it's like, that's a beautiful scene if you understand the reality of it. Even when it comes to Skylock is a Jew, and he says, "Am I not a man?" He's complaining about the harassment that he's receiving. He goes, "Am I not a man? Don't I eat bread just like you?"
Right, right.
And this is a perfect illustration of what the left is trying to, quote, claim. And yet they miss the boat by sowing confusion and breaking our compass.
Right, but by reading such literature and understanding more than just the words on the page, that requires critical thinking. And God forbid we have that in our schools.
Right, right. And the left does this. Kate Lieber, the Democrat majority leader, wrote an op-ed recently. And she says the climate crisis has exacted an unmistakable toll here in Oregon on our environment, our communities, and our economy. She goes on and says residential and commercial buildings are now the second largest and growing source of climate pollution in Oregon, right behind transportation. And then here's the kicker. Many of these same inefficient, outdated buildings that pollute our air also fail to keep our communities safe when we are at our most vulnerable. Now, I hope she's not suggesting, you know, tent cities instead of homes where we can be safe, you know, shooting up our heroin. But this is criminal to write an op-ed like this that says our communities aren't safe because their homes aren't as efficient as they could be with $1 million. With $1 million, I could make a beautiful home that was 100% zero carbon efficient. But the average trade-off doesn't work that. We go to work, we make a paycheck, we do what we can, we replace windows after the vinyl starts failing or whatever. This is just part of our humanity and our culture and how we respond to situations on our doorstep.
Well, and that's just the propaganda that they push too, is that they want you to believe that all of these buildings are inefficient and all the rest, but it involves spending billions of dollars. And, you know, that's great if you can just keep printing dollars and never have to worry about that. But for sure, we know that she doesn't want us to all live in log cabins because that would involve cutting down trees. All right, let's go and take a break. We'll have more with Senator Dennis Lithcomb after this.
Get a little more intelligence on big government. This is the iSpy Radio Show.
And welcome back. It's our monthly legislative update. We're doing that with Senator Dennis Lithcomb. He's from Senate District 28, which is down around the Klamath Falls area. And Dennis, during the break there, we were talking about taxes, and so that's kind of where I'd like to shift things here. There was kind of an interesting bill that would have raised taxes on beer, cider, and wine. It was HB 3312. It went down in flames, never even got a public hearing. But taxes never really die, and now there's discussion that the OLCC, that's the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission, may double the excise tax on hard alcohol from 50 cents per bottle to $1, which is a nice way to get around pesky things like legislation. I don't drink, so it doesn't really affect me, but is this really the right approach, that agencies decide their own tax rates with no input or oversight by the legislature?
Yeah, this is the wrong approach. Absolutely. This is the legislative responsibility. Tax bills are supposed to start in the House. They did not have the votes in the House, so now they're going to push it out to the OLCC and say, you guys just set the tax that you think is appropriate. And what's interesting is the OLCC isn't going to use that tax. That tax would come into the general fund, and it's incredible amount of money. I realize nobody's buying Bud Light anymore, but But if they were, and those individuals would certainly not be in the upper echelons of the stratus, economic stratus, but they would just be practical people. There are people on my block, on your block. There are people who stop in and buy wine or beer or hard liquor. And to think that OLCC can remember a dollar went on a couple of years ago, Governor Brown did it, and now Tina Kotek wants her hand on more of your wallet money, and it will empower her bureaucracy, her agenda, and her momentum, and the public will get the raw end of the deal.
Yeah. Well, the Democrats really seem to have this notion that if you have money in your pocket, you have managed to steal that from the government somehow. I find that
right.
I find that ideology really troubling. But you know, getting back to this excise tax that they're looking at doubling on liquor sales, the thing to remember is this is not a sales tax. It's not charged to the consumer at the point of purchase. It's charged to Oregon distillers, so they have to pay it when they sell to wholesalers, and whether those are in Oregon or other states. And that means these Oregon distillers would get pinched when they're trying to sell across state lines because of the extra costs involved. You know, maybe it comes down to we shouldn't have a state where people feel they have to be drunk to deal with living here.
Yeah. Well, and it's always a matter. The Democrats are really good at masking. They're good at masking the true factors that, for example, that are creating gender dysphoria, that gets masked. Nobody's allowed to mention it. You get canceled if you mention, I think this is wrong or I think this is right. And this is taxes are one of those things. It's a giant maze, and we like rats are trapped in that, trying to figure out which way do we go. And what the Democrats fail to recognize every time they raise taxes is there's some impact somewhere. I mean, we should have learned this in physics, where for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And thanks to Isaac Newton, we know that, we understand that, and yet somehow in the political realm, we don't see that. And every time you implement a tax, there is always some you know, pushback. It either undermines individual incentives, or you fail to increase work or earnings, it discourages capital accumulation, it distorts and throws in unbalanced and shrinkage demands into the supply chain and whatnot. And so we may pretend that this is good for, quote, the people, but it's really only good for the state. The state collects all the money, and the people are left shortchanged. And everybody knows what it's like to be shortchanged. And so the Democrats love to hide their schemes for taxing the common man. By the way, the CEO of Nike won't notice this. Mm-mm. Bill Knight won't notice this. But your neighbors in your neighborhood and the people living within a half mile of your home, they'll notice it and they'll complain about it and they'll think something should be done. And then government's going to step in and say, I know what we should do. We should make everyone drive an electric car. And it's just like these guys have lost the understanding of economics that is so important and vital to our to everyone alive. We live in an economic universe.
But you don't need to understand economics if you believe that the government should just be able to tell you what you can buy.
Well, I don't think the average taxpayer or Oregonian citizen wants to be bossed around. If you want to be bossed around, this is a great life. But there's literally millions, probably 3.5 million people who would choose to run their own life, make their own choices, because it boils down to simple things like when you look for lunch. There's a Taco Bell, there's a Del Taco, there's a Carl's, and there's a McDonald's, or there's, you know, Nancy Joe's Burger House. You get the freedom to choose whichever of those you prefer at whichever price you prefer for today's lunch that you prefer. This is your preference. And why we're outlawing individual preference is beyond me. I should be able to choose to cook with a natural gas stove or a propane stove. I should not be forced to have an electric stove in my kitchen. And to think that that's where we're going, that everybody's going to be connected to the grid with an electric car because we're forcing you to, we're going to outlaw gasoline, we're going to outlaw diesel, we're going to outlaw, and there's not enough police officers and blackjacks to enforce these kinds of rules. Yeah. So it will be...
For a party that believes or says they believe in democracy, they sure want to limit people's choices, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Senator Dennis Lithcomb talking about getting some legislative updates from him. Stay with us. Our monthly legislative update. We're doing that with Senator Dennis Lithcomb. He's out of Senate District 28 down the Klamath Falls area. Goes all the way from the California border up all the way up to the outskirts of Bend, a huge area. And so, Dennis, we've been talking about taxes in that last segment there. And have Democrats found a way to officially kill this year's kicker tax refund yet?
No, they're trying. I hear they want to capture the tax. And so this is this is another big issue. We have a wholesale gun bill. There's two gun bills that are just, you know, essentially make it impossible to purchase a firearm, put all firearms dealers and gun sporting, you know, dealers out of business. Mm. And then the kicker tax is one of those sleight of hand things. That $2 billion that every one of us overpaid, this is a key phrase, we overpaid our taxes based on the biennial budget, and we overpaid by more than 4%. And therefore, that excess we deserve back. And they're talking about finagling a methodology by spending a bunch of money early now. They'll say, we don't have enough money. Oops, look, we really do need that money. Wow. But it's not in the budget. So it's like it's a little bit like walking down the grocery store and seeing an end aisle with stuff that wasn't on your agenda. I wasn't going to buy another box of Fruity Pops, but look, it's on the end aisle. These look so yummy. I want to go home and have another two boxes of gum, you know, Fruity Pops. And we should not be spending money that we have no need for and buying a product that we have no need for. And so the stealing the kicker is a big deal. $2 billion that belongs in taxpayers' wallets. We had a bill, I don't know if you saw it, we've been trying to pull bill to the floor. Not a single Democrat voted to give the taxpayers their money back in a check. They only will give it back in a tax credit format. And they're trying to eliminate that tax credit while we're talking here on the radio.
Well, that's I suppose it shouldn't be surprising, and yet it still is. And getting back to economics, this is as you say, it's money that was overcharged to the Oregon taxpayer. But if they were to release that funds back to the Oregon taxpayer, think of all the economic activity that would create. And this isn't small chump change. It's $5,200 on average, they're saying, to the typical Oregon family. So,
$5,200. Can your listeners imagine receiving a check from the state of Oregon for $5,200? This is a per family basis. So, can you imagine tearing open your mail and seeing a check for $5,200 from the state of Oregon with an apology is what I would recommend. Sorry, we overtaxed you, and this is your tax refund. You know, and imagine how those economic goods would be utilized by people in your neighborhood.
Sure. Well, all of this is taking place at a time when the economy is sliding, and I think Oregon taxpayers would definitely love to have that money back. The first quarter GDP numbers came out earlier this week, a measly 1.1% growth, which is down from 2.6% in the fourth quarter, so less than half the growth of last quarter, and only half of the expectations, which had been a measly 2%. So against the background of the Biden economy, which is slowly strangling the life out of the economy, we have Oregon plotting and scheming and planning from where you sit. Is Oregon's legislature and Governor Kotek doing anything that would improve Oregon's business climate?
Yeah, from where I sit, I think the answer is a definite no. Look at, we've got rent control bills. We've got empowering the renter to enable the renter to not pay the landlord for the landlord's investment in capital, to require businesses to provide family leave options, to provide vacations, to provide minimum wages, et cetera. All of these are uneconomic goods. And the reason I say they're uneconomic is economic efficiency, cost value isn't part of the equation. The only value structure that's in these bills is a value structure that says, capitalism is bad, socialism is good, therefore we should push the public towards this collectivist mindset that is socialism writ large. Way back in 68 or 69, Clarence B. Carson wrote a book called The Fateful Turn from Collectivism Away from Individualism. And all of a sudden, what you see that he was prescient in way back in the late 60s, he saw this momentum moving in this direction to move people away from recognizing their own initiative, because that would be selfish, that would be greedy, that would be personal choice, that would be freedom and liberty, and pushing them towards the collectivist mindset, which is what we see running rampant in the Oregon legislature today.
Yeah, well, it's just, I continue to be amazed at the lack of economic understanding by the Democrats here. This notion that renters shouldn't have to pay their rent, I mean, that's just absurd. It's the landlord's property, it's their investment. I mean, I can't imagine the Democrats would be okay if taxpayers suddenly decided, well, we're not going to pay our taxes. So maybe what we really need right now is a new law that says that in order to become to be seated as a legislator, you have to be able to pass a test on basic economics. Maybe that's what we need. Okay, let's go and take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Senator Dennis Lithicum coming up. We're going to be talking about the business climate here in Oregon. A new survey came out, and it is not pretty. Welcome back. It's our monthly legislative update. We're doing that with Senator Dennis Lithicum. He's out of District 28 down there in the Klamath Falls area. And Dennis, going out of that last segment, I said that we wanted to talk about the business climate here in Oregon. And there was a troubling new survey. It was done by the Oregon Business and Industries and Oregon Chamber of Commerce. They did it early in the year, January, February. They asked 440 respondents. And they released the results there in March, I believe. And it said this, 41% of respondents said that they are considering closing, selling, or moving their businesses due to either Oregon's taxes or its regulatory environment or a combination of both. And I would think that would be alarming to all legislators, and yet Democrats are pushing full steam ahead for more of the same. I guess how many businesses have to actually pack up and leave before Democrats begin to take this seriously and change course?
Yeah, well, see, this is the problem. Their decision-making isn't based on economics, as I mentioned a minute ago. So it's not an economic measure. You're looking at the economics of it. Look at big cities, back east that have been controlled by Democrats for forever. I don't know how long, really, but Look at Chicago, Illinois. Look at Baltimore, Maryland. Look at even New York City. Mm-hmm. And what you see in Detroit, Michigan, what you see in those cities is the population leaving. And so now Detroit is, you know, is a modern Rust Belt with people who have vacated their homes and leaving. You can buy a home in Detroit or a suburb outside of Chicago for $100,000, which you can't here in Oregon yet. But as people leave and these economic resources that they just abandoned become blight on the landscape, the taxes in those districts actually go up. So what we're seeing is more and more union taxes going to police and fire and city workers, and more regulation getting put in place because the corporate or actually governmental entities need to make up the money from somewhere, and the corporate entities have left. So that means the taxpayer, the people living in their homes, are the ones who get taxed. And at some point they say, it is not worth my investment here to stay here. There are greener pastures. There's Florida. There's Tennessee. And they just start picking and voting with their feet because the union and Democrat machine will not forego its gain on power. And so this is the problem with as soon as we start down the road of no longer following the U.S. Constitution at the federal level, and states imagining that somehow they cannot follow the Constitution at the state level and they'll be productive and efficient and better off, these are just false concepts. The Constitution was written so that the rules were there. They're painted on the court. You know where the three-point line is. You know where the out-of-bound line is. You know what a three-point play looks like. All of those rules are decided on ahead of time, and you have to play by the rules. And the Democrats are now imagining they can just change the rule book and the world will be a better place by changing the rule books, getting rid of constitutional law, et cetera. And so that's what we face. We face a false belief in the power of state government, of collectivism, and a lessening belief in the power of the individual to make their own choices and direct their own initiative in the way that motivates their lives and livelihoods to the best of their ability. We are moving from individuals towards collectivism. Yes. Now at like we're on a high-speed train.
Well, certainly,
and
here in Oregon,
they're
going full steam ahead with trying to push through socialized medicine at the state level. You know, Oregon, you mentioned these blue states and blue cities that have people moving out of them. Oregon itself experienced this over the last 2 years. They had 10,000 move out 2 years ago, 16,000 last year. Yet to be seen how many are moving out of the state this year. You know, maybe to fix this, maybe I shouldn't say this on air, but have the Democrats considered introducing a bill to make it illegal for people to move from Oregon?
Well, California has got that going. They've got, if you move from California, there's an exit tax.
Yes.
So,
yep.
You know, it's like, wow. what they won't do, they're no longer representing you. They no longer, you no longer are dealing with them, voting for them, you know, but you have to pay your exit tax on the way out the door. I would expect the Democrat legislative body to bring that into effect, or Tina Kotek could make an executive order just slamming that into law. And you can't take your kids out of public school unless you pay an exit tax. I can see that happening as well.
Yeah, for sure. So getting back to that survey, and we'll put it up on iSpyRadio.com. This week's show is 13-17 if people want to look for that survey. Just a couple of the other bullet points here. Only 18% of respondents believe that state lawmakers care about the success of their businesses, which I am just astounded by. And then also only 7% of respondents believe the state's business climate will improve in the coming year. And that does not speak well at all for this business climate that the Oregon Democrats have created. And I feel sorry for those brave enough to continue to have a business here in Oregon. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll wrap things up with Senator Dennis Lithcomb after this. And welcome back. In our final segment now on the iSpy Radio Show, we're talking with Senator Dennis Lithcomb, getting our monthly update on what's going on in the legislature. And going out of that last break, we're talking about the extremely poor business climate here in Oregon. And so, Dennis, aside from the business climate, I had mentioned in my opener that all but three states are considering parental rights laws. Oregon was not one of those three. So according to the Epoch Times, we've at least introduced bills. But I know that that's about as far as it went here in Oregon. So could you update us on any parental rights bills out there, and how were they received?
Yeah, we brought three parental rights and regulatory control for trying to give regulatory control back to parents instead of to school district boards, because there are our Republican belief is that freedom in education, educational choice, educational opportunities belongs to moms and dads. Mm-hmm. And this is a fundamental perspective that we carry, that we would like to have serious conversations about, because we may have some things that aren't right, or, you know, could be fixed or, you know, engineered to be better. But not a single Democrat voted for any of those, while every single Republican voted in favor of those. And the reason we had to try and bring it to the floor in a procedural move is because they would never get a hearing in a committee meeting where the public could come and join in. The last thing the Democrats want to see is the public joining in when it's not their idea. When it's their propaganda and their agenda item, we'll have a public meeting and they'll bus in all of the activists from all around state. And they'll all get mic time and they'll get to say their piece. And Republicans are always fighting an uphill battle. So those parental rights bills never got a hearing. We purposely brought them to the committee or to the Senate floor.
You know what's so crazy about that?
To bring them.
You know what's so crazy about that is that if the situation was reversed and Republicans had control of the House and Senate and the governorship, Democrats would be up in arms if conservatives were trying to tell parents how to raise their kids. The Democrats would be just inflamed about that, and yet it's perfectly fine when it's their side is trying to push their ideology. But boy, if that was reversed, they would just be taken to the streets in violent ways. So I think that's just crazy. But your vote there reminds me of what happened at the federal level, too, where every Republican voted to protect women's rights in sports and every Democrat voted against it. So much for the party of women, for sure. In the time that we have left, there was a recent case that we talked about last week on last week's show where a Christian mom wanted to adopt. And as part of that process, the agency wanted her to sign an agreement that she would support any future gender dysphoria the child might be encouraged to experience thanks to the school or state propaganda system. She said she could not and would not agree to that because she was a devout Christian. But this is now the rule in Oregon. If you want to adopt or take in foster children, then you must also adopt the state's belief system. I mean, this is full-blown Nazism where the state thinks it can raise kids better than you. What do you make of this?
Yeah, well, your assessment is accurate. This is dangerous, dangerous stuff. The left has no idea that what they're fomenting here in the public mind. They have no idea what they're requiring of people to adhere to, what they're asking people to promise to. And even as you read it, I don't know if you were reading the exact nomenclature that's in the bill, but to sign or the regulatory document, but to sign a document that says you have to be willing to affirm. Mm-hmm. And this is an interesting phrase. What Has nobody ever raised a child before? Don't you know that your children make wrong choices every week, if not every day or every hour? And it's not that they're bad kids, it's that they're immature.
They're kids.
They're kids, exactly. And maturity should be a level of understanding of prudence and wisdom that parents bring to the table. And given our educational dilemma, what we're doing is we're cranking out younger and younger parents who are missing this knowledge, who are confused because of gender dysphoria confusion brought into the classroom. And this questioning, is this real? Do I really exist in a wrong body? And this is a line of thinking that has never existed on planet Earth before. And they're bringing it forward like it's just par for the course. Well, and it's really dangerous stuff.
Yeah, it is absolutely dangerous. And this notion that you have to affirm whatever notion pops into a kid's head is just insane itself. Because, you know, if they believe they're Superman, are you going to really be encouraging them to jump out of a window? It's just absolutely insane. But I guess we shouldn't expect too much from Democrats who treat voters much the same way. Hey, kids, I got some free candy for you. So,
right.
Anyway, Dennis, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been really great.
Well, good. It's always fun to have this conversation. I look forward to another one next month, and have a great day. It's been a wonderful day to chat with you guys again.
Although we ran out of time before we could talk about it, there is some good news in Oregon's legislature, for once. One piece of legislation, SB 523, appears to be on a bipartisan fast track, which would allow community colleges to offer bachelor's degree programs in nursing as a way to speed up refilling the ranks of nurses needed to replace those who retired or left the profession during the pandemic or left the state for saner pastures. Senate Bill 523 passed the Senate 28-0, and it has been sent now to the House, where it is also expected to pass with bipartisan support. Although what's not being discussed in the mainstream media is that this bill is needed to deal with administrative problems caused by Oregon's government and constant desire to be little Nazis by interfering with business, especially healthcare, which ought to be the freest of free markets. But it's not, because you can't control people unless you can control their health. At any rate, after interfering with free markets to the point of beating them right out of healthcare, thus creating an artificial shortage of nurses, the legislature's answer to the Democrat-caused problem is yet another bill, HB 3324, aimed at increasing nurse educator pay through stipends and adding more regulations which will continue to ignore free market solutions and overregulating an industry which will only fuel even more staffing shortages. Maybe we do need that economics test for legislators after all. Thank you for joining us today. We hope that you're at least a little wiser for having been here. Some links and further information on today's show page which you might want to take a look at, because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.